We're not going all in.
Hello. Welcome to Foot Guns. It is Thursday.
We're not going
April
all in because we're not Russian propaganda.
Wasabi here. We've got Hal. We've got Cletus. We've got Villy, the full crew in a rare joint appearance. No body doubles today. What's going on, guys? It's been a while.
It's like a solar eclipse having everyone together. It's
wait,
beautiful.
Did you guys watch the solar eclipse? I kind of wanted to come watch it, but I was out of the range and I didn't feel like traveling to Dallas, Texas.
It was cloudy over there or whatever. Listen, my cabin in North Carolina was in the biggest depth, whatever. It was the center of the last eclipse. And it was the least spectacular thing I've ever been involved with. Like, you know, it becomes night for 2 minutes and then your life goes back to normal. That's it.
Did you do a Trump and look at it directly through your eyes?
I'm blind. Yes. I'm blind. I'm a blind man.
I think if I was a Mayan
blind and now Trump's blind as well because you guys both looked at it directly.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, really, for Trump to look at the sun, being an orange American, he just got to look in the mirror, you know, with the amount of spray tan. The man wears more makeup than most women do in a lifetime in one day.
So
what have you been up to in your past?
Well, during the eclipse, I went full portfolio in dog whiff hat, which I think treated me pretty well. Now I'm wrecked. No, I mean, I've been doing a little meme coining, doing a little airdrop, collecting. My M'lady PFP has been pretty good to me lately in terms of ROI of airdrop. So hoping that continues. But yeah, just trying to like go full, like really the last month I've been kind of like trying to lock in more for this cycle that we're having and hoping it continues. And we got some good protocol launches and just interesting stuff happening after a kind of boring bear market.
Nice. Well, I'm going to steal, do you guys listen to like, do you watch The Wire? There's a podcast. I'm just going to go and plug it right here. It's so good. It's called Pod Yourself The Wire. It's these two comedians that they've gone over every single episode of The Wire and, it's fantastic. And one of the jokes they say there is, this isn't a podcast about The Wire. This is a podcast about, I don't know, maybe Bitcoin or something like that. So I'm going to list the topics that we can discuss and then we're going to do it in no order. We can discuss them however, you know, you guys feel like, but Iran attacked Israel. Bitcoin exists. The NASDAQ exists. Oil, inflation. What is the Fed going to do? And then, what's going on with the Japanese yen? And does anyone care about the Bitcoin halving? So, yeah, Cletus, why don't you take us away?
Okay. First of all, I'd like to wish a happy birthday, belated birthday to someone I know who's listening to my Valentine. I had to go take care of some immediate needs. We had a big position on in Korean NASDAQ futures, which is weird, but I had to miss her birthday dinner, and I know she listened to this. So, happy birthday. So, yen, we are actively fighting the central bank. We don't think that, I mean, there's all this discussion. We can start at the yen because it's what I know the best, supposedly. But there's all this discussion about carry trades and on the macro front, and have they lost control of their currency, and they're going to have to sell bonds to do it, and that's why bonds are down and yields are up. On the other hand, you would expect the 10-year to go up because of inflation. So, you know, I said in the 20% ago in the Spacing Guild inputs that it's clear that we're in some sort of mid-cycle part where, you know, inputs, we got along copper. I forced myself to buy gold and silver. I hate doing it. They're the most worthless assets in the world. But we kind of pivoted away from equities and into the input part of the cycle, because if the economy really is that good, as people say it is, then, you know, this would be the first time I've ever seen China in the toilet. and you get a rally in iron ore, you get a rally in aluminium, you get a rally in copper. So that's happening for one of two reasons. One, there's a real shortage of copper that people are freaked out about, unlikely. Two, it's starting to just feel mid-cycle. And if it's mid-cycle, you have a couple of different scenarios. One, commodities rise and yields rise, and they basically take out the bull market in equities. Two, we sort of stop here and hang out for a little while and let the economy adjust and earnings adjust or whatnot to the increased inputs, raw inputs. The whole thing gets really paradoxical because we have such a strong dollar, and I think people are not paying attention to that. And I was trying to tease that out on the Spacing Guild, our private Discord, which if you remember Foot Guns, you can come get great trade ideas, like my call for 5,400 on the S&P at 4,200 last October. And Hal's take on Bitcoin, his projected path of Bitcoin and Ethereum, which is more often right than wrong. And you could feel the institutions dialing it back a little bit, but retail's still going wild. And you could feel retail presence. I mean, it's just like all of a sudden, you know, you're the finance expert of the family and you got random cousins texting you about dog with hat. And at that particular time, you just want to go buy the picks and shovels, which would be Robinhood and Coinbase, not our sort of bailiwick. We do single stock. We will do whatever. But there was a clear moment where retail came back into this market big time. Which
do you still have your pair trade on the Tesla?
Oh, Nvidia Tesla.
Nvidia.
No, we got out of that a while back. You know, we've been in it. It's the longest trade I think we've ever had this go around or whatever. It's Tesla. I still think it's like a $50 stock, but the incentive to be shorted around these particular technical levels make it less appealing to me. I basically think it's a zero. I think it's impossible for me to be like, oh, Tesla's going to go to zero. I don't mean necessarily the actual number zero, but there's nothing good on their horizon, and there's nothing good coming.
While everyone was buying dog with hat, I embarrassingly have been buying super far out of the money Tesla puts that expire later this year, and they are now far in profit, but it feels like, you know, everyone that like wants to like degenerately like buy again dog with hat, it's like, well, what about $50 Tesla puts or something like
yeah
that?
No, I think that's
the same
right.
risk it's the same risk profile
it's the
right?
same risk. And look, all you know is that you have a very self-destructive CEO. I think though that what people got wrong about this is that there was a lot of this buying pressure in Q1 had to do with the idea that Trump was coming back to power. And that's why you saw oil and gas stocks get off the mat, even though they statistically oil and gas stocks do best under Democrats. But there was this sort of Trump comes back trade going on. And that, I think, is kind of over as people, you know, Biden has pulled ahead a little bit in the average of polls or whatever. So the election risk, which was presumed, I mean, the big question to sort of institutional investors is, why has this market been so resilient in the face of geopolitical risk, elections, 50% of the world's population going to the ballot box this year? And why do we still just keep going higher? I mean, the pullbacks get shallower and shallower and shallower and shallower. And the question is, all of a sudden, you get a 4% correction in the stock market, and then they start trotting out the bears who are like, I knew it all along, you know, and this whole world is changing, and all these global macro funds are going to be ripped apart by what's going on in the yen, and that's going to spill over to tractor supply companies' earnings. How? But I do think you have to be like, I mean, I was asking one of our comrades in the Spacing Guild, would you take $100,000 US for Bitcoin today? His answer was yes. Your answer was no, Hal. But what I want to know about that is, I will say this, a couple of things. One, if everybody's anticipating this number, right? We went back, we redid the all-time highs in Bitcoin. Now we consolidated. But if everybody is waiting on this number, and they're like 100K, and they're holding, and they're da-da-da-da-da, but they're all going to sell at 100K, I have news for you. We will never get to 100K. Now, if you've got a market that's in deep, 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 deep disagreement as to what's going to happen. I think you get to 100K and then some. In other words, it's not 100K. I'll just take you back to, I think you need to trade this like I was trading oil in 2011, which is don't pay that much attention to the number that comes after, you know, don't get into the three digits on Bitcoin. Just look at, you know, is it got a five handle on it? Probably you want to be a buyer there. Does it have a four handle on it, three handle, whatever? That is going to be more helpful to you than being like, it's at this key level of 41,000, 39,000, 59,000, something.
Yeah. Well, so I think I made this statement, like sort of, I had this realization, I think like while we were podcasting, that, you know, Benford's law is kind of the thing that we're talking about. And ever since then, it sort of came to fruition, like with Bitcoin, which is this mathematical phenomena that you often see a leading one and a leading two in a number, and the rest of them are short. And so you know, two things are going to happen, right? It goes to 10K or it goes to 100K. And if it goes to 100K, it's going to stay there for a while and it's going to consolidate, et cetera, et cetera.
Disagree.
If it starts to go back to 10K, it's going to...
Hard disagree.
Go quickly. No, but I'm saying, like, you can actually see it in the history of the price. If you plot Bitcoin having gone from 1,000 to 10,000 to, you know, still trying to get
DR,
et cetera. So yeah, no, I mean, yeah, maybe once it hits 100K, if there's momentum in the market, it like shoots up to 150.
Well, let me just take
200,
it back.
Right? Like even 200, right? It could go to like 250, 300. But then it's going to come back down, and that's going to be the part where everyone.
Let me do an analogy.
I agree with that. I think if it goes to 100, we're going way above 100 because it's been at this.
That's my point. With oil, there was a guy who went and raised a fund around it because he was a Citigroup analyst.
My point is, what's way above 100? Because like a million is way above 100 in my mind. Like, so I just think that this is just a disagreement of what is way above 100. Because for me, what I'm sort of saying is that 300K is not way above 100. Yeah.
It's 150. That's the price. That's the price. It goes to 100, goes to 150. It does not go to 500K.
Yeah, no. See, I think it goes to 3. I think if it doesn't find resistance at 100, it goes to 3, or even maybe like has some blow off top at 4.5 or.
Yeah, but I'm just
like
sitting
that.
Here looking at the futures and Bitcoin for. It's cash settled, but there is 26 contracts today traded into September, at a price of 65,000. The current front month is last trade was 62,760. So there's a whole group of people who are trading spreads around Bitcoin. And
right. Well, okay, so then let's go back to, and I'm interested to get Wasabi's take and maybe Billy's take on this too, because you and I recorded 16 minutes of what was going to be a private podcast that's now, you know, I have it now on my computer, but whatever. It wasn't quite enough of a recording to put out, and this one's going to be public. But we let's go into it a little bit, what we were talking about, which was sort of, okay, so if you think this thing's really going to go to 150, 200, whatever, 300, and now it's at 60, then what do you do? What do you be greedy and wait for 46 to buy, or do you just get in and forget about it and go do something else, right? Like, just do your risk management. Don't put too much money in and forget about it and wait for a headline on CNBC that says Bitcoin's at 110K or something like that.
I'll tell you what I did. The only thing I've done with my Bitcoin recently is brought some of it onto a wallet and bought a Bitcoin puppet NFT, which I think are hilarious. They've been pumping a lot recently. And I got in after the airdrop of these tokens, but I think we're heading into a Bitcoin DeFi cycle or NFT cycle that could be quite crazy. So I've been positioning myself for that.
So you basically like are like trying to leverage yourself to this move.
Yeah, yeah. I think what like there's a good chance at this point that the cycle, there's a cycle of building shit on top of Bitcoin. If you listen to the crypto podcasts about like what VCs are funding, they're all funding these level twos on top of Bitcoin. And there's this narrative that, okay, once you have NFTs and meme coins and shit on top of Bitcoin, they're the way people think in crypto is like they're a relative value trade. So what is the top NFT on Bitcoin need to be relative to the top NFT on ETH? Well, Bitcoin is three times bigger than ETH. So, and so like, there's just going to be this like front loaded cycle, this like catch up cycle where all this shit gets built out on Bitcoin. So I'm basically like have accumulated how much Bitcoin I want for the cycle. And now I took some of it and I'm fucking around with it in these degen plays.
Cletus, are you guys still like holding your Bitcoin long position?
No, we've been out of Bitcoin for a while. I mean, I just as a trader, I do very well in the anticipatory phase of assets. I do not do very well at the breakout phase. And we, you know, have found this is not going to be, I think, all right, so Bitcoin is still incredibly correlated to the NASDAQ. It just is. And you can't sort of fight that correlation, I don't think, if you want to be sort of successful here. I think the most important thing about what a listener could take away from this podcast so far is that if you go back and you listen to a podcast, same date, 2021, 2022, of us talking, we were talking equally about Bitcoin and Ethereum. And nobody's really excited in the Spacing Guild or private Discord. No one is really excited. I don't ever hear anybody talk about Ethereum anymore. And now that's me. Remember, I'm a TradFi guy. I'm not heavily immersed in the space. But to the extent that I'm useful to crypto, it's as a person who, you know, all of a sudden, every time I'm watching Bloomberg Asia, now they quote the price of XRP and Litecoin and all this other kind of stuff. So I just don't hear anyone talking about Ethereum, which means one of two things. One, Hal, you were always right about no matter what Ethereum does, Bitcoin will achieve a greater result. This is a concept you've articulated consistently. I mean, you've been consistent on that for two straight years. And it's really time for Ethereum to die and Bitcoin to really establish dominance. Or people have been neglecting Ethereum and there's a catch-up trade there. I will say this. I've never
made you're not excited about the data availability, restaking points, eigenlayer, layer 69, 420, account abstraction.
Wait, also,
what's going on? Where, dude, have you not been listening to Bankless? Like, you, there's
the
tons
purge,
of stuff.
The splurge, the purge, yeah. The splurge, and the merge, and the.
Don't forget dank sharding. Purge. We got dank sharding coming up, guys. Like, if you're checking out on Ethereum, I don't know what to tell you.
Oh my God.
Well said. Well said, Wasabi.
What is dank sharding? I need to get involved in that. I need to be 10 times levered long in yen terms. In yen terms. Today.
You need to be restaking, re-restaking, yield farming your restaking for points. Like, seriously, there's a lot going on.
I will outline a Bitcoin trade from a kind of behavioral finance idea. I mean, I would imagine that this $70,000 level here on Bitcoin has had a lot of volume. You have, you know, near the previous all-time high, and then it's where it's made the most recent high. And I would imagine, I don't even think it's 150. I would put sell orders at 140, because everyone who bought around this $70,000 level is going to have to make a decision when they see their account up 100%. And that is just a psychological value. I'm up 100%. How much do I really think I'm going to be? So I think the most certain trade, the most certain move in Bitcoin, should we get above the 100,000 level, you get rid of all those demons or fears of six figures or whatnot, would be, you know, from 100,000 to 140. That's where I would put my personal account trade on.
from a global macro trader perspective, this is the least interesting thing that Bitcoin could be doing. And it's in a congestion thing. You've got a clearly well-defined trade that's a short if it breaks down. You have a well-defined trade if it breaks out. And probably the best thing you can do is not sit around and predict a price, but try to get around the edges of who is participating. What have the ETFs done to the price? Initially, they were positive. And then I guess what I'm really looking forward to, Hal, is that, you know, I've met a lot of people in finance. I've met a lot of dreamers. I've met a lot of smart people. But I've never met really one who's sort of smart and a dreamer like you are. You're a really unique creature insofar as you're the first one to admit, I could be wrong, or whatever, but you really stuck to a thesis that's paid off for you financially, as well as our listeners, et cetera. And I don't know how many people like you there are in this market. And so I get most of my crypto vibes from you. And I don't, if everyone was you, I would just do whatever you said. And basically that's what I do with Bitcoin, but I put my own little whatever on it. But I don't know, like, it's so confusing because you've got some people who hodled for forever, in which case that's a pretty bad strategy. If your idea is to grow your wealth through holding on to an asset for the rest of forever, That works sometimes. Look, 666 on the S&P was an intergenerational low. I knew that at the time. And I knew we were not going to go to 540 on the S&P in 2009. And if you ever see 666 on the S&P again, that means there's been a nuclear weapon detonated or something. In other words, that's an intergenerational low. Where you can look at Bitcoin right now and say, there's very low probability that whatever the last trade value was, 62,000 or whatever, 60,009, what something, is an intergenerational low. Now, the sequencing of events, hindsight is always 2020, but it reminds me so much of like natural gas. You had the most famous guy in natural gas, Jason Arnold, get out of natural gas at the lowest it's like ever been. I mean, this was a guy that did 50%, 100% years for seven straight years. He gets out of the industry and natural gas has never gone that low again. You had Sam Bankman-Fried go to jail. That was a buy catalyst. And so anyway, I'm rambling. Someone else take over. But I wish I understood better the market participants, because I think there's a lot of dreamers in the Bitcoin realm, but there's not that many who have the math and the computer science and the data science background that you have, Hal. So I look at this as an institutional guy and I'm like, I don't even, the risk reward is probably not there for me at this price, right? I'm willing to accept this could be another Coco, which is up another 8% today. I don't even know who's trading that anymore. I knew who was trading Coco at a certain point. Like, I knew the trend following guys who were in it. I know what they believe. I know who was sort of driving that trade. But part of the decentralized nature of all this.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about trading. Cause I think, you know, what we've been talking about now is like, okay, like Bitcoin. So like, I've been thinking about this a lot of like, if you, so like, you know, you have to come up with your view. You have to like, be like, where, you know, what's your timeline? Is this a 2-year trade? Is this a 2-month trade? Is this a 1-week trade, etc.? And then you have to decide, well, what is the trend? So if the if in your mind you've decided that let's use Bitcoin, let's say, okay, Bitcoin's going to go up 10x over the next 25 years or something like that, then what you should be doing is when there are sell-offs, you should be buying. And I mean like significant sell-offs, like the kind of sell-offs where there's news and your friends are texting you, asking you if you sold your Bitcoin, you know, that kind of sell off. Like, again, because now we're talking about like a huge timeline. You're a buyer, and then when everyone's excited, you're a seller, and you like, again, we're talking about trading, not you know, sort of like the passive investing thing. And I think that's like such an easy sort of thing to do if you can like get yourself into that mindset and like actually. So again, if you know, if you believe Bitcoin is going to go, you know, what some people say, like, you know, $10 million by 2065 or something, right? You know, well, then that's what you do. But then if you're a short-term trader and you're noticing, hey, look, those people that are following that strategy that I just described, well, they're sellers at 70, right? Why are they sellers at 70? Because that's the first time, you know, in a while after Sam Bankman-Fried been arrested that their families texted them going, you know, are you buying Bitcoin right now, right? So yeah, I think I really like the 46K level. It makes like a lot of sense from like a technical level. And again, that sort of, well, where would everyone, like if you didn't want to take the 70 to 140 trade, well, you would take the 46 to 80, right? Or something like that. Again, you know, just trying to, I think you're the one that told me this. It's like, if you think about the why, you'll trip over your own dick. Like,
so you're saying you'd be a buyer at 46. What if it breaks out to the massive upside? Where would you be a like FOMO chasing buyer? Like if you said if it goes to 100, I mean, it's going much higher. So would you, if it hits 100, would you be buying then?
Well, I mean, I think again, that's like the thing that Cletus was getting at, which is, you know, I'm describing sort of a thesis of okay, it's going to go to 46. I want it to go to 80 or whatever. But if you're if you're that long term buyer or whatever, you've taken some off at 70, and like you kind of don't care. Again, like you're holding on to a core position, and it's going to go above 100, and maybe it goes to 140, and then you sell at 140, and then the next time it comes back down, you buy. Like that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like it depends on like your timeline, your thesis, how active you are in the markets, like you know, that sort of thing.
Have you looked at a chart of Bitcoin in yen terms?
Yeah, well, let's go into the yen. We got to go into the yen.
No, I'm just really keen pulling up here.
No, I really want to know what your
Yeah, like, so my thing
wait,
is,
hold on, Wasabi, have you been following this? Have you seen what the yen's been doing?
No, not at all.
Oh my god, it's kind of, I don't know, Cletus, tell us, does it matter to you? For me personally, I look at the chart of the USD yen and I'm just like, what's going on? Like, and I don't know anything about, and I know it's a complicated global macro, like blah blah blah, all this stuff involved, etc. But I just
complicated.
Yeah,
it's not complicated. I mean, the question isn't like we got out of the long Nikkei. I mean, I don't know how we top bottom ticked and top ticked that, and that Nikkei trade has been the best performer for us. But I sort of get, there's a bunch of bad Japanese data that came out, and I was like, these people are losing their purchasing power. I mean, you have to understand the history of Japan. It's an island of exporters. And it's a very, the herd mentality in Japan is way more than it is in the United States. And whenever central bankers try to defend their currency, they always lose. And so there's been moves and bonds that are predicated on this idea that there's these giant global macro funds who are going to get crossways and carry trades and blah, 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 blah. But so you've seen the 10-year treasury yield rally because the mechanism by which the Japanese are said to control their currency is selling U.S. treasuries. Okay. I mean, really? I don't – deep thinking – I'm not a deep global macro thinker. In other words, I'm not looking at, you know, auto sales in regions of Japan and all this other kind of stuff. But the idea that our target on the yen is 172, we are currently very short the yen.
And yeah, so I shorted the yen for the first time in my life earlier today.
Yes, welcome to the club.
I think you can actually condense it a little simpler than all that when you just look at, you know, the recent BOJ decision to rise interest rates to a, you know, astounding level of zero, right? So we had interest rates rise in the United States, and everyone was asking, is it sufficiently restrictive to slow the economy down, to cool inflation? And equities have done, you know, they've gone up significantly since that decision point. So when you look at a BOJ decision to go from negative interest rates to zero, I mean, what's the actual impact? Are people going to get out of their carry trades right now, you know, borrowing over in Japan and then applying it to a higher interest rate country over here in the U.S.? I mean, yeah. You still have a massive carry trade going on, and there's not a big headwind that you create by moving it from negative to zero.
I think it's very important, too. People on financial podcasts get very lazy, and they talk about interest rates and the Fed. And the FOMC policy rate is not to completely control the economy at all times. But, you know, interest rates and credit spreads are impacted by the FOMC window borrowing rate. I think I got a little spicier to throw out there for than just whether the yen will do or not do, which is, when does it pay to be conspiracy minded in your trading, and when does it pay to be linear in your trading? And one of the things that our central thing and why we are doing well this year is we said, okay, there is a worldwide conspiracy on the part of every other country in the world. All of our adversaries want Cheeto Jesus back, and they want him back now. Russia wants him back. China wants him back. You know, and so what are the pressures that they could potentially apply to force Joe Biden out of office? And I think that kind of conspirational theory is kind of healthy, right? I think the conspirational theory about the value of the dollar is going to decrease by 50% or something like that because too much debt, maybe, great, have at it, trade it. But if the value of the dollar, the conspiracy thinking that I think doesn't necessarily work, although it does make sense, which is Fed talks the stock market up with dovish talk in order to give themselves cushion for something that's lurking beneath the surface, which is pretty bad, which is layoffs are increasing. People are going to use AI as a reason to fire a whole bunch of people right now who thought that the last 4 years is normal. And so, you know, when does it pay to be sort of paranoid and a conspiracy person? And when do you sort of lose the thread and wander off the map? Because you do have to have like a centralized theory about why actors, you know, foreign nations and their economies and their behavior militarily and all that. I mean, Israel was warned about this Hamas attack and they did nothing about it. Is that related to the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu faces certain jail if he's not the prime minister? And do we not have the same thing going on in the United States, where you have a former president of the United States who's basically taken over the United States House of Representatives in order to stay out of jail? No one wants to be president again. I got news for you. It's not fun. It's a horrible life. And even the guys who are running for a second term, they lose their enthusiasm. I mean, Barack Obama, in his last couple of years, George W. Bush, in the last couple of years of their term, they look so tired. They're about to die. They look older than Joe Biden. And so, anyway, sorry to ramble about that, but if you have something, yeah.
Can I, Cletus, I have two questions for you. So number one, you said like trading conspiracy, wanting to get Trump back. What is the trade? Like, if you believe that yes, like Russia and Iran and these, you know, Hamas are conspiring to stir up shit to get Biden or to get Trump back, like what is the trade there? And then the second question is, does the name Joe Biden mean anything to you?
Dude, no, yeah, you buy these. Yeah, do you guys know this? Actually, I'm curious. Are you guys
we
aware
not?
What's
not to
been
the
going
extent
on?
That you are.
This
I'm
is a
sure
question for
Billy
and Cletus. Okay, so like, you know, the me, so we have the dog with the hat, right? Like, so the dog with the hat. I mean, this has been going on. I peg it to about, personally, to about last June or something like that. Like we had DeFi summer in, I can't remember, 2019, 2020. And now we have like meme coin summer. And so like, it's an interesting phenomenon that's going on. Like, okay, like let's drive away from like financial and just think about like what is going on here. Like, people have realized that it's incredibly easy to make a cryptocurrency on the blockchain. You know, let's bring it back to like, why is Ethereum still relevant? You have Solana now, a little bit faster than Ethereum, but it breaks all the time. And then remember when we used to talk about Phantom, and then Phantom, you know, the founder left, and there's actually like, you know, sort of nothing wrong with the chain except for, how do you get assets to the chain? Well, somebody has to build a bridge. And from a technical perspective, there's a lot of risk there. And so all the assets got fucking rugged, basically. So Phantom's useless. Same thing will probably happen to Solana. Because again, how do you get the assets there? You're basically holding a piece of paper that says that you own this thing. But that piece of paper is like on a computer, and the North Koreans can get into that computer. So the point of this whole fucking tangent is that we have this thing called Joe Bowden. Geo Bowden, and there's all the Trump has like a lot of, you know, he's got like Trump coin, he's got like NFTs, and the craziest part is, for whatever reason, people with money want to just come in and throw their money away at buying like all these tokens and stuff. And it's, to me, it gives me the same reminder of, okay, is like, there's a lot of liquidity in the market, right? Like, everyone talks about like, oh, we can measure liquidity, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, is not the fact that people want to throw money at these things a
no, that's
sign
exactly
that
the conclusion.
Maybe there's
that,
too much
yeah,
liquidity
you can,
in the
yeah,
market.
Yeah, that's exactly
that
the conclusion. So
sort of
we reached
away.
A conclusion.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I got to the sort of the 5,400 number is we reached a conclusion that, okay, look at the cum sum of inflation, and it's 20%. So divide that by 3 years. So that's 7% a year. And the FOMC policy rate is at 5%. So they're actually, it's actually extremely loose financial conditions. And the meme coin phase is confirming that you're in extremely loose financial conditions. Back to the Biden conspiracy thing, and I'll just close that, land that plane, and then we'll move on. What do you need really for, in terms of economic and policy things to happen between now and election day, for Biden to be able to just be like, no, thank you? Now, there may be a whole way that Biden can't win because he's too old and yada, yada, yada. What you need is, you need reflation. You need the stock market to correct pretty heavily. You need the widening of the conflict in the Middle East. And I do mean widening, because, I mean, that was nothing. What Iran did was nothing.
Wait, hold on. Can we come back to, because I actually want to talk about the Middle East stuff, but okay, I'm going to propose a trade. We'll talk about the trade, and then let's seriously talk about where I think you were headed. Wasabi, this is my proposal. You, this is a relative value trade. You get long Geo Bowden, you get long Trump coin or whatever. And then no matter what happens during the election, you sell on the day of the election. And it's like, it's almost like the Dogecoin Elon Musk on SNL like trade.
Yeah, no, I think that's why so many people are buying Joe Bowden. I mean, I own the Bowden meme coin. I minted a Bowden NFT that I sent you a couple of pictures of those in the chat. So Biden does have his own NFT collection now, thankfully, which I think they did a really good job and is fucking hilarious. I think probably because the election date is such an obvious, I would probably front run it and like sell it even before that. But yeah, no, I think there's no way that these meme coins don't pump into the election. I do worry about the Trump fragmented liquidity because there's like 500 Trump meme coins and NFT collections. And I just saw a message that Roger Stone has collaborated with one of the Trump meme coins and did like a cast with them. I think that's the MAGA one, which I owned some of, and then it's been doing fucking horribly, so I sold it. But yeah, I think definitely, I'm definitely in Bowdoin and will be heavier into the election.
How all right, that note, though, here's I mean, big, can you think of any reason to own either of those assets you just mentioned beyond the election? I mean, is there not a shelf life to this thing?
No, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is like a Doge still top tick. Top tick on Doge is when Elon Musk went on SNL and we recorded and, you know, go back, find it. We recorded it 2 years ago, or whatever the fuck it was, 2.5 years ago. You know, Elon Musk went on SNL and mentioned Dogecoin, and that was the top tick price at like literally like the minute he said it, you know, live on Saturday night. So yeah, I think well, okay, so maybe we're like drilling into something more interesting, right? Which is, okay, so then what happens after the election? Like when we have some sort of like extra pocket of liquidity that's basically buying call options on the election on either candidate. No, I think
would buy if Bowdoin wins. I would sell it before and then look to re-enter ahead of the inauguration.
No way, I'd exit the trade. And I got this right with the hamsters when Wasabi and I recorded the hamster podcast. It would be over. I would leave it alone for years. I would exit and yeah.
More be done. Concern and all that is just okay.
But wait, no. Now I wanna like talk about Iran. I want to hear your opinion, Cletus, on what the 400 missiles that were, you know, mitigated by French aircraft, you know, UK aircraft, American ships.
We have protective
Israeli
measures in northern Iraq that shot down missiles. We had protective defense systems in Jordan that shot down missiles. And the Iranians called up the Turks, who called us up 3 days before it all happened, so we're going to do this. I mean, that is not escalation. That's why oil didn't rally. But look, let's be clear. Oil, you know, for the Iranians to self-destruct, which is what they'd have to do, to shut the only way oil gets a real pop out of this is if they shut down the Straits of Hormuz. Now, in that area, we've got Qatar, who's our best friend, and then you got Iran on the other side. And if they didn't get any of their oil exported to China, but the price of oil would likely go up. I just don't see it. I mean, that just my initial reaction to this was, this is not it. And, you know, This is not it. Now, again, the motives of Netanyahu are the same as Trump. And that is, this man is facing prison. So if you had an entire military at your disposal to keep you out of prison, I mean, how many drug dealers, if they had an entire army out of their disposal, like cocaine dealers, they would attack whatever they needed to attack to stay out of prison. This man is headed for prison, both of them. And they will do anything they can to get out, to stay out of prison. And so that's the personal motivation thing. So Netanyahu is a separate conversation from Israel. Israel, good country, great country, great people, whatever. Netanyahu is the biggest piece of shit the world has not maybe ever seen, but he is just a piece of shit. And I would expect a piece of shit to continue to behave like a piece of shit. And so you can't take the thing off the table, which is the personal motivations of Netanyahu will overwhelm the sensible thing for Israel to do. And we just get into this protracted bullshit. So, and just in case, for the record, this Cletus,
yeah, and I think something
supports
that's funny
Israel.
Is
he supports the Palestinian people. He does not support Benjamin Netanyahu, the guy. Just so no one ever drags up this podcast and says, "No, I respect Israel's sovereignty. I respect the lives of Palestinian people.
You're a loving guy,
Israel
but yeah,
has gone overboard
that,
in Gaza. It's ridiculous.
So are you saying
stop?" And I respect their initial response, which is they have a right to defend themselves. I just don't want this podcast to be dredged up in my future as some sort of like you're anti-Semitic. Or, I'm not at all. I love Israel. It's just you got to understand that Netanyahu.
Would you support a policy? Say Netanyahu decides to strike Iran. Would you support those same American and British and French and Jordanian fighter jets
to do
a friendly escort of
the
Israeli F-15s and F-16s over those intermediate countries back to Israel?
No, we probably wouldn't do that
either.
Biden's
intercept,
already said we're not down for this.
Intercept and ballistic missiles that are coming from Israel?
It's not the objective of the United States foreign policy to assist Israel in... Oh, right.
No, I'm saying to actively intercept Israel. To Israel sends their jets and say, "Oh, here are some American F-22s that are going
right,
to ask you to turn
like,
around and go back and land
become,
in Israel."
Become like the Switzerland of the modern world.
Yeah, so the U.S. is in a completely stupid position of saying, "We support and will defend Israel. We support, but we don't support any offensive measures,"
yeah,
but it's effectively giving
it's a bad
relationship. A security umbrella.
It's a bad relationship, and
it's offensive measures
only
that
worse.
That
Look,
may or may not do.
Joe
but
Biden was vice president,
it's just a completely.
He
yeah.
landed at an airport to visit Netanyahu, and they just announced new aggressive West Bank settlements the day he landed, and it took his staff everything to not get him to go right back to the airport. Biden's a really stubborn guy, and there's just bad blood between the two. Look, the United States cannot be seen as widening this war, but Netanyahu tried to interfere in the 2012 election for Mitt Romney. He tried to interfere with Trump. He tried to interfere. He's a bad dude. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
The reason we're talking about this is and
I wrote a paper on that. I've been to Syria,
Beirut. I've stood foot in Baalbek, which was just like bombed by Israel. I have friends and family in Israel. So for me personally, whatever. I think one thing that's interesting is that this is very heated sort of, whereas when we, we did a podcast about the Russian-Ukraine conflict, and the difference in that was, I think it was really easy for everyone to say who's a good guy and the bad guy is, but this is so easy to say that the Hamas terrorists who perpetrated attacks are bad.
It is so easy to say Israel is a friend of the United States. It is so easy to say Netanyahu is bad. That's easy. I mean, that is not hard.
Yeah. Again, there's individuals that are involved. So again, I wanted to talk about this because I think it's real. I spent my entire weekend following this. Again, I've literally been to like every place in Lebanon, and I've friends and family in Israel. But aside from that, it is impacting the world, right? And it's impacting assets, and a couple questions in my mind is this a one-off event, right? Is this sort of this was the climax, and then from now on it's de-escalation, or what is the risk of escalation, and then how are the markets pricing in that risk? And I think everyone got Bitcoin wrong. Again, this is a Bitcoin podcast, right? I think everyone got Bitcoin wrong over the weekend, saying, I heard some, you know, CNBC talking heads today saying, shouldn't Bitcoin have rallied over this conflict? And for me, it's like, well, it's the only really liquid, you know, tradable asset on a Saturday night. And so everyone tried to price in this risk, right, of what could happen. And you said earlier, there's a correlation between Bitcoin and the NASDAQ. So I think like what Bitcoin is fantastic at, and we've talked about this for a long time, is sort of becoming the thing people want to use to trade, right? Like in that moment in time. And I think that, you know, again, everyone sort of, I think we can all agree, Billy, Cletus, Wasabi, that Bitcoin is something different. And the argument has sort of been like, what the fuck is it? And like, no one can say it's oil, it's gold, it's store of value, it's a money, it's a like, but like, I just think it's a different thing. And like, it's just like, you know, we're in the discovery phase, and I don't know what that means for the price. I do know that on Saturday, when Iran fired 400 missiles at Israel, Bitcoin sold off 8%. And then the funniest thing is that you go plot it on a technical level, and you put all the, like, you know, your standard, like, you know, your grade school level technical analysis, and Bitcoin just reacted in a technical way. There was no, like, it to me, it's like there was a bunch of technical traders that had a lot of liquidity in the market, and they were just looking for a reason to sell, and they found a reason to sell. So yeah, I don't know. That was a bit of a rant. But yeah, I get it. There's a lot of tension over what's going on in the Middle East right now. And I think, you know, love everybody. We love everybody. Like, don't, no, you know, we hate the people that are bringing evil into the world.
Bitcoin is a commodity.
We all know who they are. But anyways,
commodity. Yeah. It's a commodity. It moves like a commodity.
Well, if you think Bitcoin's a commodity, no we commodity tell, that I know has tell. Ever just gone up. It's always remained range bound. It's natural gas goes up to 10, comes back down to 2.
That's right.
Yeah, but, yeah. So
you think there's them, no, you would think there's them. No chance.
That's what I'm saying. I get what you're saying. It takes.
I don't know
it's
Pokemon.
Like a, no,
I've
you,
know, Pikachu.
You don't know Pokemon. She's
hot.
I mean,
Pikachu
I know Cletus, you probably
chick.
Don't. Like, there was this Pokemon that was like, I think it was called like, yes, Ditto. You know Ditto? Do you know Ditto? Wasabi, do you know Ditto?
No, what are you talking about?
So Ditto was a Pokemon. And it's like sort of like power was that it could become any other Pokemon whenever it wanted to and act like mm-hmm. that Pokemon. And so again, like, I feel like that's what Bitcoin is. It's like, it's a commodity when it wants to be, it's a currency when it wants to be, it's a stock when it wants to be, it's whatever the fuck when it wants to be.
This is where I'm coming to learn
and that's
from you,
why
Hal.
Like,
so,
it, you know,
I say it's a commodity.
To trade.
If I'm right,
very correctly.
If you were
and that's why, you
instantly
know,
remove
yeah.
commodity capacity, it is a predetermined event, unlike OPEC decisions and SPR releases with oil. But it's a predetermined event, this halvening thing. What do I do with the halvening thing? Tell me about all the halvening. If I had a commodity, copper, that was going to be reduced at a fixed interval.
No, actually, I'm curious. I want to, before I say anything, I want to hear Wasabi's view on the halvening.
The halvening?
It's like 2 days away, and everybody's going to be smoking a bunch of weed because it's on 420, I think, right?
The halvening is not priced in. Have fun staying poor. YOLO, wag me. No, I think we are, I think I would bet on, similar to past cycles, next 6 to 9 months bullish, because there are these people that don't sell, that just keep buying, that denominate their buying. We have the ETFs, we have passive money coming in. So yeah, I mean, my base case is up.
Yeah, I don't think it matters at all. I think the price has done what it's been doing for whatever the fuck reason. Again, I can't don't trip over your dick on thinking about the why. I look at the chart and I just see this thing that's like emerging, right? And there will be a day, I swear to you, and maybe I'll live long enough. I don't know. I hope so. Because obviously we would be all insanely rich if this happens. But yeah, I think there will be a day where Bitcoin acts differently, but it's not, that day is not this day, right? What is this from the Lord of the Rings? Everyone likes to talk about like, oh, this time is different. And again, it's just like, well, look at the fucking chart and look at the thing. It's going to go up. We can talk about the halving. We can talk about Sam Bankman-Fried. We can there's all kinds of shit. I mean, people like to people podcast, the What Bitcoin Did podcast. Like, if you're listening to this, if you want to actually if you don't care about price and you want to get into the lore of Bitcoin, there was all kinds of arguments like SegWit, 2x, bigger blocks, blah, blah, blah. Bitcoin has been attacked, this, that, and the other thing. We're price maximalists on this podcast, and I just don't show me something else. Right. And, so yeah, sure. Manage your risk. Don't go 100% into Bitcoin probably, or do whatever the fuck you want. But I'm just saying, look at the goddamn chart. It's just going up, and until it stops doing that, on a long term horizon, I'm trading in the way that I said, which was on big pullbacks I'm buying, and on big rallies I'm selling. And why make it more complicated than that?
And for the exact same reason, you should also buy Boden.
No, I'm pushing my pair trade. You should buy Trump and Boden. You should buy the... No, wait.
You've got a more accessible way.
Bobby says buy Boden. My financial advice is buy Trump and Boden.
We are 6 months away from a guy whose stated policy is to use the United States military to round up quote-unquote illegal migrant people. We've got who now foreign adversaries are going to be shareholders in his private stock. That's fucked up. I mean, that is fucked to the max. I mean, we spend so much time to try to keep these people, so much money to try to keep them out and advance United States interests. And I think the policy, I mean, it's just going to be mayhem. I mean, there will be an initial euphoric response if we get Cheeto Jesus back into power, but it's going to be hyperinflationary. Who do you think he's going to have running the Fed? It's not Powell. He's already said it's not. Powell's going to be some crazy person. John Paulson, the guy who made money shorting America, is going to be United States Treasury Secretary. It's like, it's going to be absolute mayhem from the perspective of the global world order, of which you are benefiting. The dollar is so strong. You are so rich. Americans are so rich right now. And you want to screw it all up because the price of eggs were lower in 2019? Come on. It makes me crazy.
I'm a little surprised. No, you sound kind of worried. Last time we talked, you were kind of fading the Trump possibility, but you seem
you really seem more need to worry now about non-zero risks. There's
no, it's how we. Oh, it's again. That's. I mean, this. Okay, that's. That's what the title of this podcast is going to be. Is you need to really worry about non-zero risk, because again, how did Trump get elected? Right, the betting market. Right, the Vegas gamblers had the odds of him winning, extremely low, and then he won, right? So It happens, right? Like that's like, you know, that's why we're not talking about Iran and Israel because we have like some sort of like, you know, whatever. And yeah, we did go into some things. It, like the point is to measure these risks. They do come into the market. I know I talk a lot about charts. I know I talk a lot about price. I know like et cetera, but like yeah, the point is to build sort of the background in which you're acting within, right? And so yeah, I think human beings in general, this is well measured, are really bad at measuring non-zero risks that are like really, really low probabilities. And no, Wasabi's right though. I do feel from you that the risk is higher than what people are measuring it at.
Yeah, so, like, say you know, there could be
3%.
What I'm hearing from you, it's maybe 6 or 7. That okay? If you want to go back to the glory days of 2020, his last term, you know, when he lost the election, what did he do? What was his first instinct to do? Pull troops out of Germany. That means Germany's, there's a reason why they're not on the fucking UN Security Council, because they started World War II. The Japanese are not on the UN Security Council because they didn't start, because they started World War II. And all of a sudden you've got a rearmed Germany who has a foreign adversary in the backyard, that will be stimulative to their economy. You will have Korea, South Korea, 6 months away from getting a nuclear weapon. They will have nuclear weapons. Japan will have nuclear weapons. Is the world a safer place with America? Every time that America shrinks from the world stage, World War I, World War II, everyone loses. It's unfortunate we have to be the principal of the school, but that's the position we find ourselves in. So this isolationist pull may have unintended consequences insofar as, you know, you're seeing Apple's going to build some stuff in Indonesia. That's a result of bad relationships with China. That's good for Indonesia. So there could be knock-on effects or third order or whatever. I stop listening when people say second order, third order, or whatever. But there could be knock-on effects that are positive for global growth, but are eventually building up to systemic risk in the form of non-zero probabilities where you get South Korea, you put South Korea, you give them a nuclear weapon, you've dramatically increased the chance that North Korea and South Korea will nuke each other dramatically, right? And so it's just going to be a different landscape. 2025 is going to be the year that you want to be allocated to global macro strategies. It's not 2024. And to the extent that, you know, we don't trade esoteric macro strategies anyway. We don't do things like, you know, short Pakistani debt, long India debt or whatever. So we're not like deep macro guys. We're more tactical, hit it hard, get gone, whatever. I'm sorry. Billy is putting mouse emojis on charts right now. I can't focus. Take over.
Dude, that's what I when the Nasdaq sort of did that recent dip that it did just before it like really, you know, took off to the rally. I put like a unicorn emoji with like the horn like touching the bottom of the I mean, you know, right? You flip your charts upside down, you change the colors, do whatever you can to make yourself.
I appreciate that
mentally,
support. It was on a Nasdaq cogent, chart. You know, we got Taiwan Semi
invest in this crazy
tonight,
fucking world that we live in,
and we have Netflix after the bell as well. So anticipate some volatility spill over into your Bitcoin markets. I would imagine around those two events because they're going to move U.S. equities.
Yeah, if Taiwan Semi rallies on earnings and Bitcoin sells off, I wouldn't touch Bitcoin for a little bit.
Yeah.
Wait, so are we short?
Yeah,
neutral. Are we short or long then?
Yeah, since the end of
this
Q2.
Is, I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, going into
not financial
Q2.
Okay, so wait, hold on. No, now I want to know, because now we've made it to 1 hour and 6 minutes. 666 is coming up soon. Wasabi, We're at the stock picker point of the podcast. You are now in a market that, from the macro side, has sort of been, I think, described in this podcast as a bit contentious or maybe not clear, etc. Are you picking stocks right now? What are you doing? You're muted. Are you still alive?
Dude, oh, sorry, I was muted. Yeah, no, I had money that I used to be heavy in the AI trade. I kind of got out of that around a little bit after the last NVIDIA earnings. I would be looking to re-enter at some point, but I have a good amount of dry powder. I think my largest position right now that we haven't talked about is Celsius, the energy drink. That's like, if you look at what are the top performing stocks over the last, I don't know, a couple of decades, Monster Energy Drink, if you look at that chart, it's just been crazy. Like, there's something about the economics of these energy companies, that energy drink companies, that is crazy. And basically Celsius is like the cool new energy drink company. It has like a crazy amount of caffeine. I've never had one, but they're supposed to taste like almost like a LaCroix water, but like caffeinated with a shitload, like, I don't know how many milligrams of caffeine. But I see people drinking them everywhere. I see, I have a big position in it. And if it continues to grow, they have a distribution agreement with Pepsi. So they've come off a little bit in the last couple of weeks because Pepsi renegotiated the terms of their distribution. That could be good or could be bad. We don't know. But I think if this is anything like the Monster trade, this has a lot more to go. It hasn't started expanding internationally yet. So that's probably what I'd be looking to add even heavier going forward, just on a company basis. I'm not really sure about the macro stuff, but that's a company that I'm looking to add in the near future.
Yeah, well, so there you go. I think Wasabi has had a strong track record of picking stocks outside of any of the macro stuff that's going on. Does anybody else have anything to add? I think this is a really, really good one. You know, if anyone's still around listening, go to Bass Pro Shops.
Smash the link and subscribe. Leave us a good review.
Send
us an email. Subscribe button. Get your bass. Smash it. Hit that alert button too. 18, hit the bell. Ding the bell.
We want, yeah.
We're not on video right now, Hal, but I'm holding my bass for sure.
Of you holding your bass with your favorite comment. You can find your.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, one thing about Cletus that you guys don't know is that in his house, he has an aquarium that is full of bass.
They call him the biggest bass in the
it's
West.
Three stories tall. He lives in a one-story house, and he has a three-story tall aquarium.
We're not going so, all yeah. in. Do, 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 do.
Five stars in review. Yeah.
All right, guys. Bye. I gotta go.
Yeah. Bobby's not coming back. All right. Bye, everybody. It was good.